Fleetwood Mac and Go Your Own Way. Suitable thing, really, when you think about my next guest. Our planet, believe it or not, the thin layer, the outer layer where we live, is practically made up of poo. Yeah, it's true. And life as we understand it wouldn't exist without the incredible recycling process that happens through the production of poo. I told you this show was going downhill, and then we do it every single day. So I thought we'd talk to some people who know a little about poo. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well, thank you. Yes, and it's a pleasure to be on your show.
No, it's our pleasure to have you. Now, Dan, you're the founder of the National Poo Museum. I'm going to ask, why did you set up a National Poo Museum?
Yeah, it is a good question. We do get asked that often, and it almost happened as an accident because we were a group of artists, did lots of project work with schools and things, and of course while we had the projects going we had an income, but in between the projects we just didn't have any income. And so one of us, I can't remember who, had this idea of creating a hireable exhibition, and then we spent some time kind of scratching our heads wondering what the theme of that exhibition could be. And it was really just fate that led me to I happened to be on a walking holiday and came across a rather unusual poo. I paid no attention to it whatsoever, but it was just the reaction of the people who were with me I turned around and saw them poking it and prodding it and kind of wondering what sort of animal had left it there. And I suppose excuse the pun, but I put two and two together and came up with a poo museum.
How long then has this poo museum been in existence?
Well, it has been in existence for a while. So that happened. We had our first exhibition in the Isle of Wight Zoo, just as a kind of a pop-up exhibition in 2016. But then at the end of that season, we as our little group of artists got the exhibition back, but we had no home for it. And so we were then searching for a home for it and had no money, really. So we ended up doing a deal with our local council to take over what was a former public toilet, or before that, it was part of an old Victorian fort to keep the French away. But more recently, a public toilet. And we asked them, can we have this as the home of the National Poo Museum?
And they said yes.
They said yes. They said yes. They were well up for it.
So, that's brilliant. So what reaction do you get from the public when you say to them, I founded a poo museum?
Yeah. Well, you know what? When we started, I was quite kind of worried about what reaction we might get. And I was worried that I'd become known as Mr. Poo and so on. But you know what? People's reaction has been so enthusiastic, so welcoming and warm and sort of delighted that now I'm very happy to be, I'm proud to be Mr. Poo.
Proud to be Mr. Poo.
Yes.
So I suppose that this is going to sound a daft question, but where do you, I mean, I know they come from animals, but where do you get your poo samples from and how do you preserve them? Because, I mean, we all know that poo can be a bit smelly at times and you can't really have that sort of smell floating around your museum, can you?
No, definitely not. And has, at times, being a former public toilet, we did have one or two issues. We had to refill the traps in the old toilets and things because we did get some whiffs coming through, although not from our exhibit. So what we did was think, how can we present them in a way which not only makes it safe and approachable, but actually makes poo beautiful? Because we love that idea of, the paradox of taking something that we all shy away from and don't really like to look at, and then actually try and make it look like sort of the crown jewel. So what we did was develop this way of encapsulating them in the crystal balls, which are made of a kind of liquid resin. So first you've got to completely dry out the poo sample, whatever it is, and that can take anything from, a day or a few hours for a stick insect poo or something, to a few weeks for rhinoceros dropping. So And then you put it in a mold, and to cut a long story short, you pour the resin in, and then there's a long process of polishing. Yeah, polishing these turds.
Polishing your poo.
Yeah. And then, I kid you not, there has been an awful lot of turd polishing going on here. So, and there is even an opportunity in the museum for people to have a go at polishing a turd, just to
prove
the other thing that you can't. So, now, and it's worked really well.
Now, I understand that in the museum you've got a square poo. Which animal produces a square poo? I mean, you've got to be pulling my leg. You can't get a square poo. We all know poo is not square.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's... I hope I can say the word anus.
You can say that safely.
Word. I don't think there's any animal in the world which has a kind of square opening. But there's one animal... that actually does do square poos, although through a round anus, just like all the rest of us have, and that is a wombat. So if you ever find a square cubic dropping in your garden or something, although it's very unlikely, then you'll know that you've got a wombat infestation. they're the only animals that do cubic poos, who are not.
And apparently they use it to attract mates as well.
Oh, well, now you're teaching me something.
Oh, right.
I knew that they... Well, I mean, it's theorising a lot of this. So there are two questions relating to these cubic poos, you know. First was, how do they do them? And it turns out that they have a special last bit of their intestine which squeezes them into these cubic shapes before they come out of the round anus. But then the other question was, why... And I suppose it might be to do with mating, but they scent mark their territory, like lots of animals. And for that to be the most effective, they need to put their poos in a prominent position. But they hardly drink any water. Sometimes they don't drink at all. So their poo is very dry and not sticky. And so if they were round and they placed it on top of a rock or one of a branch, high up, as they do sometimes, then it would just roll away. So the theory is that by being cubed, then more of them just stay balanced on top of these prominent positions, and that's important for sending out signals to other wombats and other animals.
Oh, my Lord.
Territory, so.
Now, Dan, you're talking to me from the super loo.
I am, yes.
I mean, I'm going to ask a daft question. What is a super loo?
A super loo, well, as I said, these were previously public toilets, and they've been closed for over a decade. And we felt that in opening our museum, we wanted to give something not only cultural to the community, but something practical. And so the first thing that we did was reopen what had been the accessible toilet actually as a toilet for the public to use. But we did it in the spirit of the rest of the museum, but long before the rest of the museum was open. And so in here, so I'm actually sitting on the loo here, and it's a beautiful old Victorian. It's called the Excelsior, and it's in a kind of wooden cabinet. And above it, though, it's connected to, bizarrely, to a cistern, you know, these high-level cisterns. But it's an aquarium. No fish in it, but you can see in it, it's this beautifully lit aquarium. And in the aquarium, there are lots of bubbles going up, but there are some glasses floating around. And it said, there's a sign which says, remember, when you flush the loo, you're doing it with pure drinking water. Because, you know, we often don't think about how getting rid of our waste actually takes masses and masses of resources of water. So we do need to be careful how we manage that.
Dan, it's been a pleasure talking to you. You're going to hand the phone over to Nicola in a moment. While you're doing all of that, I'm going to play Madness and Baggy Trousers. Dan, thank you so much for your time today. I'll catch up with you next time when I'm in the Isle of Wight.
You'll be very welcome. Yes, come and see us. Come and see our square poo.
All right, then. Now, I will play Baggy Trousers and you can go and find Nicola for me.
Yes. I'll do that. Thank you very much, and goodbye then.
Siren Radio 107.3.
Madness and Baggy Trousers. Now, we're talking with Dan, and now we have Nicola with us, equally from the Poo Museum. Good morning, Nicola. How are you?
Good morning, David. I'm very well, thank you.
Now, I suppose, of course, the questions that we're going to ask you are slightly different from Dan, because you actually work in the museum. When I was down there in the Isle of Wight last week, that's where you and I met. I guess the question is, what would you expect to see if you went into the Pooh Museum? You know, tell the listeners, what sort of things were you showing me when we were there?
Well, it's interesting because most folks have absolutely... Well, they don't know what they're coming to see. Why would you? There are so few Pooh Museums in the world. So no matter what, it's going to be a surprise. So obviously, we do showcase Pooh. Mostly animal poo, and the one thing we wanted it to be was beautiful. So, I mean, I don't know what you thought when you came, but we feel we've presented them in the most beautiful way we possibly can by setting them in these beautiful resin...
Well, it's wacky, let's put it that way. It is a wacky museum, whatever you say about it.
Well, do you know, we've had some lovely comments, and the one that is a favourite is Quirky Science. And I really like that because I tell you what we didn't want to be. We didn't want to be gratuitous and we didn't want to be shocking. What we wanted to be was fun and educational. And the feedback we get from folks is that it is just that. So, yes, we do have poo and we've got them displayed in these rather beautiful poo spheres. But we have so much else as well because... Once you've done, I'm going to say delve into poo, you realise what a fascinating substance it is and how integral it is in the environment. And, you know, and some animals rely on it to complete their life cycles. It's an important substance and it goes off on all different tangents, and I think that is what's surprising to folks.
Now, how did you then, Nicola... yourself, because I mean, you're a lovely lady. How did you get involved with Pooh and the Pooh Museum?
Well, the thing is, I did know the group of artists that decided to set the museum up, and I got so inspired by this whole idea of a Pooh Museum that I actually wrote a poem about it.
Was that a poem or a poem?
It was a crossover because it was about Dan setting up the Pooh Museum, and it was as if a gate was open, because after writing that poem, a whole load of others came into my mind, before I knew it, I'd written about sort of 16 Poohs and decided to put them in a book. And from that moment on, really, and I illustrated the book as well, I kind of then got involved on the creative side of curating the museum. So apart from actually helping Dan making some of the exhibits as well, but I was working full-time at the time, and then I left that job and joined the team permanently. And so I am part of the welcoming team when you come to the museum, because that's how we met over the counter.
Absolutely.
And you no doubt have remembered the first thing I got you to do when you came to the museum.
Yeah, I did. I'm not sure I'll share that on air.
No.
people can come to you and find out that themselves, I think.
Exactly, yes.
Now, you talk about coming, but where I mean, I suppose we ought to explain to people where you are and when you're open.
Yes, so we sit atop a cliff in Sandown Bay, sort of between Sandown and Lake and Shanklin. It's a very beautiful view. We've got the whole bay from Yavelland to Luckham. So we sit atop that in a fort, an 1860 fort, one of the Palmerston forts built along the south coast, part of the defence from the French, or perceived French invasion. And we are situated in what was the public toilet.
Yes, Dan's told us all about that. Mm.
Yeah. So, the thing is, for us it was like not the ideal building, but actually
I think it is perfect because each of those cubicles has a different exhibition in it, and it means it's a very personal experience when you're looking at the exhibition.
Oh, well, that's a nice thing to say. I hadn't thought of it like that. Yes, it is quite a personal experience. There's about 7 cubicles, each with something different in them, most of them interactive. So mostly, I guess, geared for children, but there's no doubt that the adults love doing the things too. Yeah. So, yes, yeah, so we've been able to theme them out with a different poo story in each of them. So it has worked out rather well.
And what does it cost to get in, Nicola? Because, I mean, you're obviously got to be paid at the end of the day, and you've got the upkeep of the museum.
Yes, we do have the upkeep, and we are completely self-funded. So we've tried to keep the prices as low as possible. So for this year, the prices are £4 for adult, £2 for children, under fives are free. And dogs are welcome.
As long as they don't leave you a sample.
As long as they don't, no.
Now, to this book of poetry, before I let you go, I suppose we ought to ask, who is it aimed at? Is it aimed at the adults or is it aimed at the children?
Do you know what? It's for everyone. It's honestly, it's not Shakespeare by any means. It is just fun little poems, you know, a quick read with little quirky illustrations. It is just a bit of good, clean fun. It's nothing complicated, shall we say.
Nicola, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thank you and Dan so much for joining us today here on the radio.
It's been our pleasure.
Next time I'm in the Isle of Wight, we'll come and have a coffee with you.
That would be lovely. We'll look forward to that. You're welcome.
You take care. Look after yourself.
Thank you so much, David. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.